some hopeful news in the wake of the hurricane. The state's largest utility, Florida Power and Light, says electricity is being restored faster than expected. Several counties will come back online today, and all service should be restored by Friday. But it's going to take a long time for the homes and businesses that were most heavily damaged to reconnect to the grid. Let's bring in Ted Curry, Director of Energy Studies at the University of Florida's College of Business. Ted Curry, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Again, we want to stress that it's going to take a long time for life to return to normal for lots of people whose lives were literally upended by Ian. But the fact that power is being restored faster than expected sounds like encouraging news. Do you see it that way? And what explains it?
Well, one of the interesting things about the Florida regulatory system and the utility system as a whole is the steps that Florida has taken since the 2004-2005 storm season. During that storm season, Florida was impacted by 10 hurricanes over the course of 2 years. Hmm. And following those hurricanes, the Florida Public Service Commission embarked on an effort that's been going on now for 16 years, where the utilities get together every year and meet with the Florida Public Service Commission, meet with members of the public, and talk about what they've been doing to make the system more resilient and how those efforts have been progressing. And something that Florida Power and Light brought up a couple years back in one of their presentations is that during the 2004-2005 storm season as a whole, they restored on average 55% of their customers after 2 days. For Ian, that rate has been a lot higher than that, 80, 85, 90%. I think that shows market improvement.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about what they did after those storms in 2004 and 2005. I understand they replaced wooden utility poles with concrete ones. They placed some of the power lines underground, among other measures. It cost about $3 billion. Was that effort enough, do you think?
Well, the important thing to remember is that these are efforts that all Florida utilities have been doing. And yes, as you mentioned, utilities have had formalized programs of swapping out wooden poles, inspecting poles to make sure that they can stand up to the conditions that we expect. Targeted undergrounding, where it makes sense. You know, undergrounding power lines doesn't always make sense. All you're really doing when you do that is exchanging the possibility of damage from wind events and flying debris for the possibility of damage from water incursion through storm surge and flooding. You know, there really isn't a safe place to put power lines. It's really just a question of where do you locate them that minimizes your risk. And that ultimately is the decision of the Florida Public Service Commission, because utilities are not autonomous. They can't just implement a program because they feel like it or because they want to. They have to go to the Florida Public Service Commission to make sure that it represents the best value for the people. And that's important because the people ultimately pay for all of this.
Right. And when you say the people will pay, any costs incurred are going to show up on their utility bills, right?
That's one way. If it's through, let's say, a government subsidy, then they're paying through the taxes.
Right.
And when they lose service, they're paying the price there too, because they're losing access to service or their quality of service decreases.
Ted, I'm intrigued by the process that you described that took place after 2004 and 2005, those storms. You talked about a kind of workshopping process across the state. And I'm wondering, do other states have this kind of process of workshopping and planning for future storms?
To my knowledge, not formally. I spoke at a workshop in Connecticut following Superstorm Sandy, where it was put together by the governor's office, and they talked about what are the types of things, basically, where do we go from here, and the types of things they could do to make Connecticut's grid more resilient. Where Florida, I think, differs is that this is a formal process. Even during the years where we didn't have hurricanes, we had about a 10-year stretch where we didn't get affected by hurricanes, and people start to ask, do we really want to go through this, you know, keep having these meetings, keep talking about this? I mean, there are other things we could be working on, but Florida stayed the course.
Right.
I think that's led to a stronger grid, that formal process that has been, you know, going on now for 16 years.
Wow. Final question. You say that all the models are based on history, and it sort of reminds me of the maxim that sometimes we get caught up in trying to refight the last war. So I'm just wondering, is there a lesson today from Ian that, you know, has taught us something about how to make the grid, the power grid, more resilient to these kinds of storms going forward?
I think there is. I think what this has pointed out is a lot of the interdependencies in the grid with the electric system and the water and wastewater system. And as we move further and further to electrifying the transportation system, you know, that interdependency is going to have to come along too. You know, if we're depending on the electricity system for more and more of our essential services, I think we're going to have to look at all of the things that depend on electricity and take those into account when we're coming up with these cost-benefit calculations, because the benefits are not just for the electric system. They're for all the other systems that rely on it, and that reliance is growing every year.
All right. That's really interesting. Ted Curry, Director of Energy Studies at the University of Florida's College of Business. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony.